Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, sweet. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm K.G. Klein.
And this is Back Talk. Ken, there are directors whom you can grab immediately. Steven Spielberg, Ron Howard.
I knew you were going to go right to the director on this one. There's no getting around that. Folks, we're talking about Jim Jarmusch, and he and Wes Anderson are probably the two quirkiest directors working in movies today. And you're always going to get a very polarizing reaction to one of their movies.
Well, take a look at his title. Father, mother, sister brother. What yes. An awkward title. And that's his new movie.
That's his new movie. This is his first film since the pandemic. His last movie was 2019's The Dead Don't Die, that extremely quirky zombie movie with Bill Murray and Tom Waits.
Well, let's talk a few others because I'm coming only from Stranger Than Paradise and Coffee and Cigarettes.
Oh, you've got to know Broken Flowers.
How do you remember? How you
because
can even
they're
remember
so
this?
Strange, you can never unsee them. That's how you remember
all
them.
Right. Bob, what's going on with father, okay. Mother, sister, brother?
Jarmusch likes to do films about isolation, feeling solitude, people unable to connect or relate with each other. Bonds are very, very rare in a Jarmusch film. So what he's done with this one is he's decided, let's take three short films about three families. The first one is about a father and his two grown children. The middle film is about a mother and her two grown daughters. And the third film is about two 20-something children whose parents have passed away. And each film is very different in feel, and very different in setting. One of them is set in Paris, one of them is set in Dublin, Ireland, and one of them is set in, I believe, New Jersey. If Jarmusch is known for anything, it's being extremely quirky, and you really are either going to love his films or you're not right. going to get it.
Look, this guy is so strange that you have to be a cinephile to get through his films. Why? Because he gives you nothing.
And that is
you,
the point of
I
the
know,
movie.
He requires yeah. you to use your cinematic brain to figure out what's going on underneath. But then really, in life, he captures life as I appreciate it and am mystified by it with the stuff that isn't said. With what in that first one with Tom Waits as the father?
Yes.
What is going on?
That is just the point. Is early in Jarmusch's career, he wrote scripts with lots of trivial talk, almost boring talk that was inconsequential to the point that he was trying to make. With this movie, he's doing no dialogue whatsoever. What's carrying the film is the awkward glances, the motion of the hands. People just not connecting and not knowing what to say. They're not saying anything in this movie. They're just sitting there staring at each other.
For a group of people who are dull, who have nothing much to say to each other, which is most Thanksgiving dinners in America, that he exaggerated. It's like he zoomed this thing and it's exaggerated. But the point is, how much have we been to other gatherings, and particularly of families, where nothing is said, but the subtext is
oh,
is
gosh,
rich.
Yes. Yes, and this is what Jarmusch likes to focus on in his films, is the inability to communicate and the inability to form any kind of a relationship. You have three people in that first segment sitting in this house in New Jersey, very, very beautiful setting, a lake, very isolated.
Yes.
It's the father, Tom Waits, who is a staple of Jarmusch. Jarmusch has a certain cast that he likes
cigarettes.
To work with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Waits in this one, this is a rare Jarmusch film that doesn't have Bill Murray. Bill Murray is almost always in his films. Yeah. But in place, we have the quirkiest cast you can imagine. We have Adam Driver and Miam Bialik from Big Bang Theory as the son and the daughter. And Miam is a very intellectual. She plays very close to the character that she played on Big Bang Theory. Very smart, but very disconnected. Adam has been carrying his elderly father along, giving him money to support him.
But Adam, I love Adam. Adam is also out of it. when they do a toast with their water. I don't think you can make a toast with water. And then he has something else like tea they were making a toast with.
Yes.
He says, I don't think you can make it with tea. So he's just got that little blind side to him. He doesn't understand the ramifications of what they're doing.
You get the sense literalist that each of the three operates in their own little world,
yes.
But those worlds just never can connect. They never can engage. The first one, to me, was the most disappointing. It had this great cast. It has the most story to it, and it has this punchline at the end, which is just a little awkward. I didn't think that was necessary.
What is it? Go ahead. I don't care.
The punchline at the end?
Yeah.
That the father actually probably has a lot of money and is keeping a secret from his son, and he's taking goodies from his son and gifts and acting as though he is broke for his son, when in reality he's got a beautiful BMW in the back, and he's got all of his furniture is brand new, and he's got a girlfriend.
With your description, I also believe that dad has so much more to give than they allow him.
Very likely. He is part of that separation, that distance. And he has this wonderful monologue, one of my favorites of the whole year, where they ask him if he's taking any medications or drugs. And he goes, no, it's Tom Waits. You know you're going to get a quirky response. And no, the cocaine, no. Heroin, no. No, horse tranquilizer, no, none of that. And it just goes on and on. It's hysterical. It's the funniest segment. I felt that punchline at the end was unnecessary.
Throughout, you're questioning, do these people really know each other? Are they from the same family? And even starting with the two of them in the car.
Well, and there's just the point. If they are part of the same family, why does that mean that they would necessarily know each other?
I think you're right. That is what our director is telling
us.
You think you know people? Even lovers? You think you know them? And I suspect that you don't really, unless you have an unusual person. You're just not going to get everything that you think you got.
You get the impression that each character has their own sphere that they're living within, and there are people functioning and that they relate to within that sphere, but in the Jim Jarmusch film, these people meet people from outside that sphere, and there's no connection, even though they're family, with the exception of the last segment, which is all about strong family bonds, unbelievable
family
bonds.
It is so not like his.
Yeah.
It is so full of warmth. And love.
Yeah, it's a very, very strange segment for him because it is about two brother and sister twins who are extremely bonded but feel that they didn't really ever know their parents.
Yes, yeah, it's a coda for everything that came before. I agree. Mm. I think it's brilliantly done. The two of them are black, so they're completely different in some respects from everybody else who came before them.
And they were from a mixed marriage, a white mother, black father.
Yeah.
You get the impression that the parents were very much in love, were very strongly connected, had a very eccentric lifestyle. They died in a plane crash in the Azores. What they were doing in the Azores, the kids have no clue, but they were involved in so many fascinating things, and now the kids are in Paris after the plane crash cleaning out the house.
Charlotte Rampling.
Mm-hmm. The two daughters.
Two daughters.
Yeah, one is Kate Blanchett, who is another staple of Jim Jarmusch's films.
And you would think that Blanchett would clarify everything. And she's not.
No. Well, both of the daughters are vying for the love and affection of a mother who is very distant.
Right.
Kate Blanchett's the older daughter, and she's really trying hard. She's a bit of a train wreck, but she's really trying hard to gain her mother's love, whereas the younger daughter is a true train wreck. She probably is living out of her car, but she has managed to convince her mother that she has this elaborate and very successful lifestyle. And you get the impression that for Kate Blanchett, any chance of being the number one daughter went out the window years ago.
The movie is
Father, Mother, Sister, Brother.
Ken, what do you advise our audience?
If you're a fan of Jim Jarmusch movies, go see this one. It's going to live up to expectations. If you're not a fan, you might want to avoid it. It's not something you want to take a date to and just say, hey, let's check this movie out. You're going to be blindsided.
Well, I just like to advise them that this is the kind of movie that I really like because it just challenges you, and because I think life is so full of subtext. Families are so obtuse sometimes with each other. Our director catches that all in one, and yet at the same time, he's so brilliant. I think I got it.
Jarmusch will never be a conventional director, and I give him a lot of credit for that.
Well, let me chew up some more bites by giving the title again, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother.
The quirkiest movie playing in theaters right now, John, without a doubt.
Look, unless you're willing to talk about this with a companion. Don't bring anybody that you want to lose as a friend or lover, because believe me, this is, and it's playing very right now for and only in one cinema in our town.
Yeah, well, it had a nice strong opening, and it was playing citywide for about 2 weeks, but it apparently is not doing that well. But his films generally don't do well.
No, and he doesn't care.
Well, I think he does to the extent that he doesn't get financing very often. I mean, it's been now 6 years since our last Jim Jarmusch movie, and that's because The Dead Don't Die bombed at theaters despite its cast.
Before I miss my chance, all right, I'm going to give you two of my favorite quotes from directors. And when I'm making a presentation in Jacksonville this weekend, let me paraphrase what Jarmusch said.
Okay, because directors are not often quoted.
Right.
So this is interesting.
Yes. Jarmusch said something like, if my film is popular, I've done something wrong.
Yeah, but that's not good if you're the producer and expecting to make money on that movie.
No, but my favorite is Woody Allen.
Oh.
And it's always I was a little dicey for me to present it even in front of a whole audience of conservatives. But this is I end every presentation with this. Woody Allen says, if my motion picture has made anyone miserable, I feel I've done my job.
Good for Woody.
Is that Woody?
That is a great one. All right, I'll give you mine. This is a quote that Harrison Ford swears George Lucas gave them on the set of Star Wars, and it defines Lucas as a director. He told Harrison, all right, do that again, only better.
I love that.
That was the extent of George Lucas's directing ability, which is how he ended up with Howard the Duck.
Yeah, the three that I know about, Mystery Train, Night on Earth, and Coffee and Cigarettes is about the only one I really remember is Coffee and Cigarettes.
Okay. Yeah, well, those are all earlier films in his career.
Well, those are ones with three parts.
Those are not films I'm real familiar with.
Okay, give me one that you can can you think of one?
A movie with three segments?
No.
Oh.
Just regular movies. What should they know? Stranger Than Paradise? What's one that you can clue our audience into? For our director is
For Jarmusch. Oh, yeah. Broken Flowers. Broken Flowers is his most successful movie. Came out about 35 years ago. It stars Bill Murray. Very similar in a lot of ways to Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. Oh. And Bill Murray is a staple of Jarmusch. Jarmusch almost always uses him. Uh-huh. And Bill Murray plays a fellow who believes that he may have a child by a previous lover. So he decides to go and visit all of his previous lovers to see if he can figure out which one of them has a child by him. And each time he encounters one of them, there's this enormous gap. There's this disconnect that's partially due to the years that have passed and also partially due to the fact that he's remembering them in a very different way from the people they actually are.
See, this is why I love this director. Yeah. This is so human. This is so much like the rest of us. You know, we go to movies because we think we're going to have a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to tell us exactly what our experience has been.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Murray can convey without words a whole range of emotions.
And
he can tell a story without speaking a word. And there's one great scene. Anybody who's seen Broken Flowers remembers this scene where he goes to one of his ex-lover's homes, and she's got a 16-year-old daughter that he's thinking might be his. And the daughter at one point walks into, now she's played by a 19-year-old actress, but she walks into he's alone in the house with her. She walks into the living room on her cell phone, and she's stark naked. And she just stands there in front of Bill Murray, stark naked on her cell phone, and the camera's on Murray, and his face just carries the moment. He has no clue what he should do in this situation, and he just, you can feel that he is both awkward, anxious, unsure of what to do, and then she just turns around and walks out again.
Now, you and your written review, which I always appreciate, and I advise people to go to our NPR website for WCBE to read your review, you use the term
deconstructing. This is deconstruction cinema. Deconstruction cinema means that we're taking the essential elements of cinema, we're breaking them down, and we're removing some of them. So in this case, cinema typically has a narrative. It has dialogue to carry the story. What Jarmusch is doing is he's taking out the narrative, and to a certain extent, he's taking out the dialogue as well, and allowing the the looks, the glances, the hand motions to carry what's going on.
And even I can't believe there'd be flashback. Here's the term I use. Would you agree with this one as an alternate to your term, a minimalist?
Minimalist, yes. Yeah, minimalist works also because, again, you're working with the least elements.
Yes.
What Jarmusch does is he's challenging the narrative. He's saying, what if there is no narrative? What if there is no dialogue? What if the dialogue that is in there is completely inconsequential? He does things that no other director is brave enough to do. No other director in Hollywood is going to have characters sitting in a car, listening to the music on the radio, and not talking.
And sitting with each other.
And because they know the audience is going to sit there going, I'm getting bored. You know, what time is it? When does this movie end? And people will do that with this movie. But that's the point. The point is, he's going to do it because he knows he can accomplish something, a reaction from the audience, by doing it.
But you're going to be careful whom you bring to this movie, because they're going to, within 5 to 10 minutes, they're going to say, nothing is going on here.
Yeah, and that's quite true. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens except the first segment that has that punchline ending.
We love it, though. How
absolutely
can we love
nothing
it?
Happens, but in reality, most of the time, nothing happens.
I know. There is stuff that happens that gives you a hint. With all this minimalism, that gives you a hint as to what's really going on. I mean, so in other words, it isn't just setting a camera up and letting people
talk. No. There's nothing ad-libbed about this. These scenes are so the cinematography is so structured, he doesn't allow any external things to break the solidness of the scene. There's no pets in any of these movie scenes. There's no water dripping. There's no
neighbors coming in.
No neighbors coming in. Nothing that breaks the structure. And the cinematography is exceptional, especially in the second segment. John, do you remember the scene where the camera is over the table?
They're
looking
shots
straight down.
Right.
Yeah, they're looking straight down at the table.
This is not the first time he's done that.
He is a master of this cinematography where the camera doesn't move. The camera's positioned. Yes. There's a little bit of movement from the actors, not much, but that's it. Everything is mostly motionless, and nobody's talking.
Yeah. I know. I love the genre of families in movies, and I thought I might pick a completely different one just for contrast.
Sure.
How about the Corleone and Soprano families?
Well, yeah, you've got the gangster family movies.
Right. I mean, what's the difference?
The difference there is you've got a strong story. You're talking about, starts out usually with the rise of a member of the family to the gangster family, and then how they move throughout the gangs. Whether we're talking about Goodfellas or we're talking about The Godfather.
So you've got lots of background.
You've got a lot of background, and the family is not a family. It's a corporation.
That's right.
It's a mafia corporation that just happens to all be related.
Here's maybe the most popular family film that I can think of, The Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah. You know, the father and all the daughters and son, you know, all singing. Of course, that's based on a true story, too, more or less based on a true story.
The Von Trapp family.
The Von Trapp family.
But it's so sweet, it's almost unreal.
Oh, yeah, it's a very, very sweet, almost could have been made by Disney. You know, and you can go through Disney films like Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
and that's even
Disney,
more sugar.
Disney definitely focuses on the family. Pete's Dragon, another great one about a boy, an orphan boy, who through the story becomes adopted by a strong family bond that loves him.
Yeah,
you know, not necessarily the greatest Disney movie of all time. There's some kind of cocky performances in it. It's a very 70s feel. But again, the idea of the family. But Jarmusch, I mean, he looks at the family and he says, what if the father, the daughter, and the son have absolutely nothing in common and they don't want to let each other in to their own world? You know, the son is divorced. You know, the daughter has a husband and kids, and the father's the mystery, but even the kids don't know the father.
Another famous family. It doesn't dominate the film, but it is there always in the background. The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah. The aunt and uncle.
Sweet background family. And that's why I love these, and I've always looked forward to movies that come out about families, particularly around celebratory times like Thanksgiving, because I think those directors are ready to explode everything.
Well, we had a wonderful one 2 years ago called Bad Shabbos.
Oh, yes.
You remember that?
Oh,
wasn't that a wonderful film?
That's very,
very funny film,
yes.
Very quirky cast.
That's a great example.
Yeah, and you know, coming together for Hanukkah, for Passover, I believe, all kinds of bad things happen.
And another sweet one, Meet Me in St. Louis.
Meet Me in St. Louis, one of the great family musicals. And, you know, that's an interesting film because a lot of people consider that a Christmas movie.
Right.
But that film has sequences about Halloween. It has sequences about Christmas. It follows the family through the course of a year. And it's also very memorable for having brought some really great songs into our repertoire, including Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which was cut from the movie originally. Because I'm going to go on a little tangent here because I love this song. Mm-hmm. It was cut from the movie because the song was originally about how the family was coming apart at Christmas time. And there was a line in there, instead of until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. It's from now on, we'll all be living in the past. And Judy Garland put her foot down during the production and said, I cannot sing that to this little girl because I would be a monster to sing a song like that to this little girl. Mm-hmm. And they cut the song, and then they decided, no, let's rewrite the song. And now we have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
In looking at the Western genre, there are a couple of families that come to my mind, families out of The Searchers and Shane.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And,
well, you can't ignore The Searchers.
Right.
You know, The Searchers is a magnificent piece of film.
Yeah, and great directing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Shane, although there's a lot of tumult.
Shane, another one where the family is already established, and then it's the family under attack, and then it's the outsider coming in. The anti-hero comes in to save the family. And the family is in Shane is almost a vulnerable character. It's how vulnerable the family is to the evil until the anti-hero comes in and stands up for them.
Yeah.
We see that in a lot of police dramas, too, where the family is just a victim until somebody on the outside comes in and helps them.
And we've mentioned before, through the years that we've been together, how many films, even Marvel films, have parents looking for the kids. In many cases, the father looking for daughter. Fragmented families that are looking to get together.
Well, we see that, if we're going to talk Marvel, we see that specifically in the Spider-Man animated, which is Sony, not Disney, and Sony got it right. That's the best Marvel movie of all time, is those two animated films. But there you have Miles Morales and his very strong bond with his parents, but he's also an adolescent. He's growing up. He's starting to try to find himself, and he's starting to break the rules and go off in his own direction. And then you have Gwen Stacy and her relationship with her father, which is really beautifully done, especially in the second film, Across the Spider-Verse. One of the best depictions of a Marvel character, I think, in any movie. And her father that is also losing his daughter. She's growing up. She's becoming, finding her own self, her own voice. But she still needs that affirmation from her father. She still seeks his approval. Beautifully done. If you haven't seen the two animated Spider-Man movies, oh my gosh, you are missing fine, fine cinema.
We've discovered that there's a great deal of drama going on in family that are in movies. Not so on the movie we're featuring today because it requires so much. But I'll tell you, there's one story that folds into all of this. It has both its love and its drama and its cruelty and so on as a family. And it goes back much earlier than all the films we have talked about. And this would be the Nativity story.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
So anywhere you're looking, that touches everybody.
Yeah.
It's a family in transition. And even though we don't have any kids who can talk in that story, we certainly do have both the benign and the cruel going on in the world. Seems to set the scene for all that we've talked about. So any final words on father, mother, sister, brother?
Yes, I'm going to make one little comment here. Jarmusch is a fan of gimmicks. As much as he loves a structured story, a structured shot, and this very ambiguous characters, he can't bring himself to escape this need for gimmicks. And he throws them in. And you see, for instance, in the middle sequence, you see the scene where the mother is sitting at the table and he's got a light behind her head. And she's got a halo around her head. And I'm like, come on, Jim. You know, do you need to do that? But he does need to do that.
Yes, he is.
And then in the third sequence, you've got the son and daughter driving around in her 72 Volvo 1800 ES, which is a quarter century older than either of these characters. You know, why does she drive around in a 1972 car in modern-day Paris? Never explained. It's, again, just Jarmusch being quirky.
Yeah.
You know, I I'm being structured in everything else. I'm going to allow myself to throw in a couple of little gimmicks.
Well, and you mentioned earlier on this movie time, you mentioned what I think is one of the best shots, that a recurring shot, and that is the bird's eye shot of the teacups and
the teacups. Yeah. There's probably a lot more Easter eggs in there that are relevant to Jim that we're not picking up on. Maybe that that BMW that Tom Waits drives away in at the end. But these are all things that he allows a personal connection. He must like those old Volvo 1800s. He must like that high performance 80s BMW. He just decides, you know what? I'm the director. I say what goes. I'm going to put that in. And you can wince and you go, that's a gimmick. But at the same time, I give him credit for doing that because it saves the scene in some occasions, because it gives you a distraction from the tedium. And you're looking at it going, why in the world are they driving that car? Otherwise, you'd be sitting there thinking, all right, nothing's going on.
And if we haven't convinced you, if you're a cinephile, that this is worth seeing, and he is a director worth experiencing, take a look at a photo of him. You'll find he's like a very avant-garde picture of Andy Warhol.
Very much so. He's a German director. And going back to what I said earlier, he and Wes Anderson are the only two people really in directing films today, writing films, directing films, that are brave enough to go out and do something that is so non-commercial. They're going to lose money. None of Jarmusch's movies have ever made money. Don't invest in Jarmusch movies. Let somebody else do it and then go see them. They're not trying to get rich off their movies. They're trying to create art. So they're sort of a Van Gogh in this way. They're creating art, whether anybody sees it or not. I don't even think they care. But at the end of the day, have they made any money? No, but they've made a contribution to art that will probably be appreciated, if not in our generation, in generations to come.
And they are feeding all the nerds like you who want quirky movies with substance.
Or no substance. I would say in Jarmusch's case, they're quirky movies with little or no substance.
Yeah, as I said, your companions are going to say there's nothing going on here. But I'm going to respond and say, yes, everything is going on here.
If you think there's nothing going on in a Jarmusch movie, you're not paying enough attention.